This is Dino Dan from Cypress, California, and you're watching the Barbecue Central Show.
Happy to have you aboard here for the really big barbecue show.
Boing. We cook because we have to, and we grill because we want to.
Hit me. Fine, how's it going?
You have a great show. I'm a big fan.
Boing.
So what seems to be the problem here? This man looks like he's dead, and he's in the crackle.
Charbono! It's all about the Charbono, dude!
Succulent fish! What?
We ate 54 wieners.
So listen, Laverne, shut your face.
I'm shaking like a dog shit peach seeds.
We have top men working on it right now. Top men.
And just like that, we are into the second hour, Barbecue Central Show, where we talk about all the most important barbecue and grilling talk here, the country, the globe. If it's important, we're talking about it. The show originating from
Palm City, USA, Cleveland.
Still to come on the show this evening, our pal Doug Scheiding, the longest running embedded correspondent hailing from the great state of Texas. Closing the show a little bit later is the operator of Smoke and Joe's Pit Barbecue, Joe Martinez. You would remember Joe from being the 2023's focus, the podumentary from last year, running that food truck. We say good evening to those of you watching tonight through one of our video streaming platforms. You can go to facebook.com/ BBQ Central Show. You can go to twitter.com/BBQ Central Show. You can go to youtube.com/@BBQ Central Show. And as always, there is a robust chat going on in YouTube as well. We have a YouTube poll question of the week. We're asking everybody through YouTube and all guests this evening, do you like curry? And currently 54% of you are saying yes. It's changed. We tip to the second hour, and everybody's thoughts and feelings are now reversed, and we are saying, yes, we like curry by the slightest of margins, but nevertheless, the majority is a majority. 56% of you are saying that you are fans of curry. Coming up on the best moments of the Barbecue Central Show in 10 minutes or less this coming Friday, episode 325, taking you back to December 5th. 2017, being featured this Friday, longtime friends of the show, Dr. Barbecue Ray Lampe. In the show, we talked about, at the time, he was on a radio show in Tampa Bay on a station called The Bone. We talked about his potential attendance at the then 2018 version of Grillstock over in Bristol, England, I think. Now, that had changed ownership hands, or ownership had changed hands. So John Finch and his partner, the original founders, creators, and putter-honors of that event, had eventually sold it. So we talked about what the potential of his going to Grillstock under the new ownership. He was open to talking about it, but we also got an update about his, at the time, unopened restaurant, Dr. Barbecue. It seemed like a never-ending saga of things to have to get through in order to open, which it finally did, by the way, to great success until it closed last year, year before, a little unsure about that. But it was fun getting the monthly updates from Ray. And if you're not familiar with Ray, good intro to him, his personality, what he was like as a guest. Not that he's not around anymore, but I just don't see him as frequently here on this show. So look for the latest Barbecue Central Show in 10 minutes or less. You can subscribe to this show and to the Best Moments show by going to this portion of the website, thebbqcentralshow.com/subscribe. And don't forget, if you want to hear a guest or segment that you think's been lost in the archives, you can email our friend John Solberg, JON@thebbqcentralshow.com. That's JON@thebbqcentralshow.com, and he will do his best to meet your expectations. And now, friends, neighbors, and or otherwise, I told you I would talk about it. If you are going to New York City in search of burgers, specifically burgers coming out of Burger USA, sorry, Hamburger America, which could be Burger USA. That might be one of his books. Hamburger America. You're in for a treat because we have an in-depth review from burger expert, foodie lover, live fire lover, fan of this show, one of my great friends. And did I mention he happens to be the executive producer of the Barbecue Central show, Jason Kaplan. And I'm going to get right into it because, as I said, extensive. Greg finally got a chance to eat lunch at Hamburger America, George Motz's burger place in New York City. Been looking forward to going since before it opened and was upset it took me this long to get there, but better late than never. Here's the review. Let's go right to the bottom line. Let's start the most important part, the food. Bottom line, it was about as perfect a smash burger and french fries that you could ask for. This is exactly what I would expect from George Motz. His place delivers. So, great review right off the top. Now we get into the menu. Love, love, love that the menu barely had any options on it. Fried onion burger, classic smash burger, single, double, or triple patties plus toppings, a few non-burger sandwich options if you're insane enough to go to a George Motz restaurant that has burgers and you don't want burgers, you have some options there. You want a beer? Great, they got one. Miller High Life, the champagne of beers. They also have a few milk and chocolate milk options, soda, of course, and then my favorite, the Brooklyn Egg Cream. More on that here in a second. They also have three desserts, a pie, a chocolate chip cookie, and they also have cookies and milk. I cannot describe to you how freeing limited choices can be. I ordered the double classic smash burger with the works, fries, egg cream, done out. Thank you very much. They do have some off-menu items that you can request that I know about. If you want a patty melt, which New York Times claims is having a comeback, you can ask for the Chester. Now, food in more detail. The smash burger, which Motz did much to popularize, is pretty simple at the end of the day. That means you have to cook it perfectly and prepare it perfectly for it to stand out. Hamburger America hits that out of the park. I don't know what to say. It was perfect. The bite was perfect. The mouthfeel perfect. The crust on the patties, the cheese, the bun. And getting it with the works didn't mean that it came with a ton of stuff. It was mustard, chopped onions, and pickles on the bottom of the bun were all I could discern. I'm a big ketchup guy. This is Jason talking. And I was halfway through the burger when I realized I hadn't put any ketchup on the burger. I went to reach for it, but then pulled back because why mess with perfection? To belabor this point anymore, if you've ever seen the great movie, The Menu, this is the burger you are imagining Anaya Joy Taylor is eating. Fries are in the shoestring style, not my favorite, but not sure he's done it. Not sure how he's done it. These fries taste like I remember McDonald's fries used to taste in the 1980s. Just crunchier, hotter, and better. Again, no ketchup. I did try it with ketchup, but the ketchup took away from the yumminess of the fries alone, if you can believe it. For the drink, he got the chocolate egg cream. This is something I love with a burger. I lived in Brooklyn when I first got my job in 2001. And would often eat at the local diner, really lunch counter, and was enamored by the Brooklyn egg cream, as it was called, when I ordered it. If you've never had an egg cream, the best way to describe it is like a milkshake, but with seltzer in place of the milk. It does have milk in it, but seltzer is the overwhelming texture you get. Sounds weird, I get it, but bear with me. A cheeseburger with a milkshake sound, in theory, delicious together, but like peanut butter and jelly. And they are, but you eat a good cheeseburger, you drink a great milkshake for lunch, and what are you left with? The rest of your afternoon is completely ruined. You're bloated, you're tired, you're swearing that you'll never do it again. another food pairing like this, fried chicken and waffles, on paper sounds like a really great idea. In reality, you're left feeling like Veruca Salt at the end of her Wonka tour. A gigantic bloated mess. The egg cream, you get the chocolatey milkshake taste without the bloat afterwards. So keep that into account as you visit there. The rest, little bit of a criticism here. Not a fan of the layout of the restaurant. You walk into chaos. Thankfully, it's not super busy when I went. I probably would have walked right out if it would have been a different time and a lot more crowded. It's just confusing, and the staff, all super nice, not proactively helping. When you first walk in, you walk into a burger counter, the counter, the stools, all right there out in front of you. Is this where we sit? Do we wait to be seated? No idea. Nobody's helping us. We were looking to sit anywhere. Nobody was coming to the burger counter. We go over there. They're pointing to the order. Since there were no seats at the counter, we went and stood where she pointed. My confusion, I went over to the area. It did say, order here on a sign. But it was right at the desk at the cash register. It seems a little bit confusing. However, for as unintuitive as the logistics are getting into it, the payoff, you're going for the burger, right? 4.9 stars out of 5, according to Jason. It's a must visit. Jason, thank you so much, my friend. Taking huge time out of his busy day from being executive producer of the Howard Stern Show to write the Barbecue Central Show, an in-depth review of Hamburger America. I gotta go now. On the strength of that alone, if you're headed to New York City, now you gotta go. I want to hear your review too. Is it going to be as good as Jason's? Probably not. Few would be. He's a professional. Doug Scheiding's ready to go. Before we get to him, we're talking about Primo Grill. Evidently, the double XL Primo that I saw a year ago at the HPB Expo wasn't ready for sale at that point. They were just showing it off. I have it on good authority that within the next month, we're going to be seeing for retail the Primo Grills XXL. Big grill. Malcolm Reed just got his hands on one last week. I'm sure he's going to be doing some videos there. Maybe Primo has already posted some videos of that to get a little hype going. Here's what you need to know. Primo Grill right now is the only ceramic cooker where you can effectively achieve a two-zone fire. Can the others say they can do it? I mean, you can bank coals off to one side if you want, call it two-zone. But with the oval design, you're able to achieve a real two-zone fire. You bank the coals off of one side because of the shape. You've really left yourself a vacant area, not by the heat at all, especially when you're using deflector plates and all that stuff. It's a can't miss. They have accessories that will boggle your mind and really complete your Primo Grill experience. However, they're only sold through dealers. So find one near you, primogrill.com. And then once you find one, visit the dealer in person, touch and feel all the ovals, as I tell you each and every week, and then buy the one that fits best your needs and budget. I recommend XL always, at a minimum. Again, nobody has ever complained about having something that's too big. Just ask my wife. But I've heard a lot of people be a little ticked that they didn't buy big. They bought with their financial eye goggles on first. Don't do that. Don't fall victim to that. PrimoGrill.com. Nick Bauer will be on in about a month's time to talk about that XXL as well. We are back with Doug Scheiding from Row Cookers talking about getting into the rub business. Stick around, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Matt Stern, Jim Rome, Dan Patrick, and Greg Rampey. The Mountain Rushmore of talk show entertainment. Now, let's get back to the Barbecue Central Show.
All right, welcome back. This portion of the show being brought to you by Pit Barrel Cooker, the most unbelievable outdoor cooking device on the planet. It's currently available in three sizes. It's got a host of accessories. Doesn't matter if you're a beginner or professional, it's a cooker you want to add to the arsenal. You visit pitbarrelcooker.com and tell them the Barbecue Central Show sent you. We're happy. Jimmy Shotwell, our pal. Oh, look at here. Jimmy Shotwell giving us the numbers. Memphis in May has 143 teams registered for this year's event. Smoke Slam is about, what is that? A little less than three times under that at 59, sub 60. If we want to say it a different way, that's what you do in radio when you're giving time. You say, like right now, it's 10:15 Eastern, 45 minutes from the time of the hour, everybody. And coming on is Lolita with It's My Party. Yeah. All right. Enough of that. Joining me in the lead of the second hour, someone you hear pitch the show on the fourth Tuesday of every month in the second hour during the Embedded Correspondence segment. Our longest running EC, by the way, from Texas. He is also a very accomplished competition cook, a contractor for Traeger Grills. You've seen him pull solo segments on the show before, talking about social media growth, winning Houston Livestock and Rodeos, and all this other stuff. But tonight, we talk about the recent launch of his rub and how he got here. We welcome back our pal, Barbecue Central Show's guest Hall of Famer and pitmaster of Rogue Cookers, Doug Scheiding. Dougie, before we get going here tonight, we have a YouTube poll question of the week, which I'm sure you voted in. I've asked everybody, including all guests, do you like curry, yes or no?
If it was an assurity question, I would say absolutely yes.
Yes, all right. 56% of people are still saying yes, they like curry, so it flipped from the no's to the yeses as we turn to the second hour. And appreciate your insight there. Unbeknownst to me, because I only listen to 40% of the show as it's happening live, and sometimes I miss it when I go for the re-listen on the next day driving into work, I missed the fact that you were getting ready to launch rubs into the market. So Why bother getting into this portion of the business when there are so many rubs out there currently?
There are so many, and so many. I used to say there's so many. And going back a little bit of history, I used to make my own rubs. You know, I had a chipotle, cherry rub that I used on my ribs. I used to make my barbecue brisket rub.
But these were homemade rubs, not for sale.
Yeah, these are homemade rubs. And then my cherry chipotle ribs started tasting differently. I still can track it down to a different paprika that my local barbecue supplier was using, and it totally changed my ribs. And so then I became, I'm going to use commercial rubs, and then I'll mix them, and they should taste the same from batch to batch. And that made it a lot more consistent for me. So why in the world would anybody want to come out with a rub?
So what's the catalyst? Does somebody approach you to do this, or are you getting into a mindset where, okay, well, why would I? Well, maybe now I do. So now I'm going to find a partner.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did have a company, a Texas company approach me, and I thought about it and I decided no. But then, as you know, I'm a ambassador for Head Country and a paid consultant to them. And so they strongly encouraged me to come up with a rub or set of rubs.
Head Country did?
And Head Country did. Why? Yes. Well, I didn't know. Well,
they have rubs.
I didn't know exactly. Yeah.
Good ones.
They have rubs. Yeah. They have really good ones. Yeah. And I use them. They have great sauces.
Right.
And I use them. Well, unbeknownst to me, this was all part of the process. They were getting bought out by Old World Spice, and I didn't know it.
Mm.
And so they wanted me to come in and be a part of their barbecue spots pitmaster program. And so that was kind of the groundwork of why they wanted me to be a part of that and come out with my own rubs.
What's the program? I'm not familiar with it.
They have a program of about 30 pit masters, Barbecue Spot does. And they, if you go to their website,
is Barbecue Spot a business?
The website. Yeah, it's actually the online web presence for Old World Spice.
Oh,
Sterling
okay.
Ball.
Got it.
Sterling
got
Ball
it.
Is on there, you know.
Gillespie,
you know, Luton Booty and Blazing Star, you know, Mike and stuff. So there's 30. And Meathead actually is on there as well, if you recall.
Yes. Oh, yes. I recall. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I'm sure Sterling's been through here a few times too, but yes.
Did you have rub recipes ready to go, or did you now have to go to work on some rubs?
Yes, and kind of. Mm. I definitely had a brisket recipe that I've used for years, and it's done well. You know, I've got a second and a fourth at the San Antonio Rodeo with it out of 300 teams, and so I took that and just tweaked it a little bit and played with it. And that's what I've been using for the last year and a half or so on brisket. Got a first place last summer with it as well. So, the all purpose seasoning, I did have to come up with a rub for that, but I had the basis of one from one that I had used in the past. It's a little different, than more chili powder, in my all-purpose, less smoked paprika, than the brisket. And Doug's dust, I wanted a stinking finishing dust because, you know, we, in competition, we like to use, you know, White Lightning is great and dominates the steak, right? This mine is a paprika based, and it's built for barbecue. And so you can put it on after you glaze and you hardly notice it. And so that's, you know, but it's loaded with MSG.
So is your brisket rub the commercial recipe that you've made? Like you bought commercial rubs, put them together and make your brisket rub? Or was this a homemade brisket rub that you had recipe'd?
This was using the base of one rub and then adding three ingredients to it. Hmm. And in various proportions. So I actually played with that for about 6 months and finalized it. And then the all purpose, I actually played with a little more. You know, the brisket I think is good on all red meat. You know, some people have used it on pork and salmon as well, but and done well. But the all purpose I think is great on chicken and ribs.
How many are out right now?
Well, the Texas brisket is out. This last week, the brisket actually went into full production because it was originally just made for Home Depot. The brisket rub was, and then the Doug's Dust went into production last week, and the all purpose mist on Friday. But so it's going to be in production in the next week or so, and apparently it has to go through a 48-hour hold or something for, you know, USDA or something like that before it goes to the warehouse. So it'll be at the Barbecue Spot warehouse within the next couple of weeks.
When did Head Country tell you should start getting some stuff together? Has this been years ago?
Yeah, probably 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah, probably 2 years ago.
So how long does it go to, or how long does it take to go from first idea, first sample to ready to sell? Is it longer than 2 years, or are we all still within the same time frame there?
I would think, if you short circuited it, let's say if you already had your rub ready to go, you could get it done in 6 to 8 months. I think if you you went with a smaller co-packer, you know, Old World Spice, you know, is it's the big gorilla to a certain degree, but it took a little longer for me because it took a little longer for me because I had to work on a rub. And so that was 6 to 8 months there.
Let's talk about the major steps. So you get your recipes ready and now you're going to be sending the recipe off to the manufacturer. Let's talk about those steps and how that eventually gets you to a product that you're comfortable with selling. How does that transpire? And what are the big hiccups? Because we always, whenever I have these conversations, the one that always seems to recur is, this is my recipe, these are the ingredients, and maybe I'll bend on some, but I don't want to bend on others. And then the co-packer's like, well, if you don't bend on these, then it's going to cause this much, and that might show them they're not going to be moving. And so there's all these great internal struggles and sacrifices that you might have to make to get this thing to be a viable business portion. So what are those steps for you?
Right. So you have to come up with your rubs. So in my case, that was, you know, 6 or 8 months. And we can revisit the question later in the show if we have time. But as you know, I had a health issue that factored into this whole thing. So where I had colon cancer. And so I was very patient during the whole process. So that actually kind of slowed some things down. But going back on track, the normal process is get your recipes, then you provide them to the co-packer. You provide them to the co-packer, and the co-packer actually tries to match them. So they'll come up with the blend. They've got their, you know, brainiacs that, you know, the chemistry people send it off, you know, send it back to you. You taste it and you say, that's pretty close, but you need to add this, or you need to do this. And then maybe they'll send. So the all purpose, they got that in 2. The brisket, they got it in 3 rounds. My Doug's Dust, it took 5 rounds, and then they just sent me some extra ingredients, which I told them they were missing, and I of what they were using, because, you know, the MSG I was using was different than their powdered MSG, and, you know, the paprika is different than their paprika, and so it you use actually different varying amounts. And so the 6th time, I basically just reiterated myself and finally came up with what they needed to add on the 2 ingredients that I thought they were missing.
So how long does that take in total?
Oh, that probably took 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
You know, that took months. And then, you know, there's other things. Trademarks. I wanted to file for some trademarks. So, you know, I've got Rogue Cookers trademarked. I've got Rogue Rubs trademarked. I've got Doug's Dust trademarked. I used Suzanne, you know, for that.
So, Suzanne Moskowitz, yes.
Moskowitz, friend of the show.
Moskowitz.
And, yeah, exactly. Used... got a website going. So I've got a website, I've got a cart ready to go. And so you got to finalize that. Then once everything's approved, you've got to get labels. So it's on you to, you know, to get labels designed. And so then that takes, you know, 2 or 3, you know, months. And yep. So Low, Slow and Rogue, that's trademarked. But, so you need to go through that. And then the co-packer needs to finalize the ingredients that are going to be used, you know, the scan code and all of that. So it takes a while.
Any major fights with the co-packer about ingredients or anything like that?
No. It was just got a little frustrated with the Doug's Dust, but, and luckily I didn't have to sacrifice anything. Luckily.
An Old World is, or Barbecue Spot is in charge of getting these rubs into retailers' hands, or they put together like tests or pilot markets to do this? How does that go from a warehouse into somewhere where they can actually be sold?
That's the key question on who you choose, right? Because if you choose a smaller co-packer and that's all they do, and they're really just packing it for you and then shipping it to you, and you're going to do your own fulfillment, you're going to do your own promotion, etc., that's a harder road to go, in my opinion. Old World Spice, I mean, once they have the distribution channels. They've got contacts at Academy, Ace, you know, Home Depot, you know, the large stores. A lot of people already have Old World Spice accounts. So if you're a SKU in their system, you know, they can order right off. Another thing, you know, in the Barbecue Pitmaster program, they actually front the inventory. So I get, you know, paid off of what the sales are, and I don't have to invest the money. You know, if I was going through with a small co-packer, maybe I'd have to pay for 1,000 bottles or 500 bottles, or, you know, whatever the price break is. Right. So no, I've got a pricing that's already set up. But that's one of the big things that Old World Spice does, is they have a full-time salesperson that, you know, that's actually at Ace Hardware at their show this week.
If you had to do the investing yourself, something that you would take on? You feel confident you could go and make calls and get your rubs into stores where it would be, I don't know, like a banging business, but you're selling what you're bringing in. You're housing them in some kind of a storage unit or whatever the hell. Or if you had to do that, you probably wouldn't be so attracted.
No, I wouldn't be attracted to it because it'd have to be temperature controlled. Who knows? It'd probably have to be, you know, if you're doing everything legit.
You FDA could probably make more money at it, right?
Yeah, you probably could. You probably could. But I think getting in and approved by HEB as a chain of grocery stores or whatever, mm-hmm. I think that's a long process, yeah. You know, to get in. And so Home Depot went to Old World Spice after I went and did demos at Memphis in May, and I'll be back there again this year for Home Depot. And they liked my brisket rub. I cooked for the executive team. They liked my demo. And so then they went to Old World Spice and says, is he part of your program? We know he's part of Head Country. They said, yes. They said, you're going to make his rub for us. And so that's why they did it. And they said that was unheard of, that even before production or even in the first year and a half to be able to get into a large chain store.
Yeah.
And so they, just the awareness, because if they have a portfolio of 30 brands, oh, you know, maybe they've heard of 10 and haven't heard of 20. And so that actually helped, was very beneficial in my, you know, my name's not Tuffy Stone or Myron Nixon.
Outside of Old World doing whatever they're doing from a marketing standpoint, are you able to try and sell into stores? In other words,
absolutely.
Mom and pop shops, regional yes. locations, stuff like that.
Yep.
Are you so, on that right now, or you can do it and you haven't done it yet?
Because it's taken a while, I am waiting for the actual bottles to be in the warehouse and a SKU and for them to be up for sale on Barbecue Spot's website. But absolutely. Absolutely.
What's the goal?
That's a good question. I would like some mailbox money. I think more importantly, I'd like to build my brand a little bit more. And so, you know, raise the awareness of my brand. And I think, you know, I'm able to do that because when I go to events and having rubs and, you know, that means a lot more to other people and stuff. And so it's actually been kind of a fun process, you know, from a creative standpoint, coming up with the rubs and then using them. So I still use some other commercial rubs, but I'm primarily using my rubs right now.
You have no huge investment into this then, like labels and stuff like that? Or does Old World do all that too?
No. I have to pay. Well, I had to pay for
labels,
the design.
Trademark, the design, the barcode. Yeah,
they actually print the labels because they want to make sure it's a certain quality, mm-hmm. let's say, mm-hmm. and it has the, you know, the shiny sheen to it. And so they wanted that in their domain. So I'm probably into it about 3,000, maybe 4,000. You know, because I got insurance, you know, I got commercial insurance. And that's another reason to go with a large company. If you go with a smaller co-packer, they don't have the insurance that the large chain is going to require. You know, pick a number, 5 million, 8 million. I don't know what Home Depot's is, but that's a large number from an insurance standpoint to insure. So a smaller co-packer is not going to have that, and that'll prohibit you from actually getting in there unless you front the money yourself for the insurance.
Where do you see it in 2 years?
I would like to be in a couple of chains. It's hard to compete. When I go places and cook, I would like for the local store, like the Ace Hardware, et cetera, to be able to sell my rubs because I'm there. Those people will know my name. So do I have grand visions that, you know, I'm going to make tons and tons of money off this?
You want to be like as big as Malcolm, Heath, and Cosmo?
That would certainly be a goal. I don't know if I've really thought that through as an official goal, but that would be certainly something. But am I doing barbecue full time? No, hell, I've got two other jobs. Yeah. But you know, the Houston Rodeo this year, I mentally quit one of the jobs. So so it's there's going to come a time when I'm down to two, and then barbecue is going to be much more of a focus. But you know, life short, time short. You got to live it now.
You quickly blew past it. said that you had a bout with colon cancer. What happened?
Yep. And thanks for being the spokesman. You're probably one of the 30 people that I told. And I just wanted it to be more of a personal journey, you know, so it it happened when it was July 15th, 2022 is, excuse me, is when I got the phone call. You know, I went in July 13th, no symptoms, had a friend of mine that had a few issues with his colon and things. And he went in and he found out that he had some problems and it wasn't colon cancer, but it was other things. And so I thought I'd go in and cause I had had a referral, they never called me. And so finally I pressed them during COVID and got in. So it, you know, found out, had surgery August 6th. And then my first chemo, and it was stage three only because it was in my lymph nodes. It was very self-contained, hadn't even perfed the wall. And, but it was in my lymph nodes. And so I had to do 12 rounds of chemo. So I think I did about 5 months, on the show, and I could hear my voice crackling, and, you know, I wore a hat and stuff like that. So go in and get a colonoscopy. My surgeon said that over 25 to 30% of her, patients, are less than, did she say 40? I think she might've said 40. Mm. So certainly less than 50. So, and I, you know, I waited till I was over 55, 50, 56.
Right now, cancer free, feeling good, looking good.
Yeah. Thankfully. Yeah. Yes. Good. Yeah. Thankfully. Yes. You know, so I had several things that were driven, you know, by a higher power, and, certainly that all helped me. So, and I appreciate you advocating for people going and getting colonoscopies.
Absolutely.
I know I kind of pushed you in that direction. And, you know, if we can together save a few people or to catch it early, that's the key. You got to catch it early.
And so, it's easy stuff. It's easy stuff.
I still have my port in me, but because, you know, 2 years, you got to make it. Yeah, you got the port, you know, so it comes up here into my neck. So, but you've got 2 years to make it. And then that's when your odds go up a lot for longevity.
Doug, appreciate the insight on the rub stuff and appreciate you being so candid about your diagnosis with cancer and then kicking its ass, which we certainly appreciate. And we'll see you in 2 weeks we welcome our pal Sam the Cooking Guy as a guest sit-in for the Embedded Correspondent. So who knows if we'll even talk about anything we want to talk about.
Right. Well, who knows if we'll even get any words in edgewise.
Sam answering any and all questions for everybody. I feel like that might happen. Doug, appreciate it. Thanks so much. Hey. There's Dougie right there. Doing well, looking good, and... Yeah, I mean, it's, I'll continue to advocate for it. And as Doug said, he wanted to keep that in a tight group, which I can certainly appreciate on many levels. Let's talk about Franklin Barbecue Pits before we get to Smokin' Joe. He's in the green room ready to rock. This is the backyard version of the famed pit. Built by Aaron Franklin for his renowned barbecue restaurant in Austin, Texas, Franklin Barbecue. Built for those barbecue purists who want to take their craft to the next level, what you have with the Franklin Barbecue Pit is a deeply thought out and refined version of the propane style pits that Aaron uses in his restaurant. Stylistically, it reflects the kind of bare bones industrial handmade aesthetic that he loves, as in the patina. And the way he allows you to see the welds and the craftsmanship as they're built. Now, the schematics of a Texas offset pit are relatively simple, but the things that are happening inside complicated. There are dynamics of physics and chemistry, very few moving parts. Numerous and massive differences divide the Franklin barbecue pit and the average barbecue smoker sold in the big box store for one. Much of the challenge of building these pits come from the thickness and heaviness of the materials. Also, most of the value is created there as well. Cheap offset smokers are made with thin metal. Not only does cheap metal tend to warp and crack when sustained the kind of heat you need to make great briskets, but even on a cold day, that thin metal just sheds the heat, struggles to maintain the constant temperature. The Franklin barbecue pit Mostly quarter-inch American-made steel. It's strong. Anything that sees heat, engineered to be incredibly solid, should last a century or more if cared for properly. If you're in the market for a premier offset pit, here we go. FranklinBBQPits.com. That's FranklinBBQPits.com. And if you're somebody that owns a retail store and you'd like to bring a Franklin barbecue pit in there, Jimmy Shotwell, I see you. You go to FranklinBBQPits.com, fill out the dealer form, or tell them you would like to become a dealer or at least have some conversations. And Matt Gase will give you a shout, try and set something up with you. And now you have the silent salesman on the floor, right? Beautiful offset looking pit. So even if you're on the phone talking to a customer, somebody walks in, they walk around it, they see the welds, they open the door, they see the deflector plate that's in the main cooking chamber, all the stuff that you've come to know and love about a Franklin barbecue pit, all right there on the floor. Become a dealer if you're not. And if you're not near a dealer, go to the website. You can buy one directly. It's shipped right to the end of the driveway. We are back with Joe Martinez to hash it all out. What is going on? We're closed. We're open. Are we? I don't know. Smoking Joe's next.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Whole packers, full racks, legs and thighs, injecting butts. If you've never heard this before, you might think you found the best Triple X show ever. Let's get back to the most homoerotic host out there today, Craig Rempe.
And we thank Doug Scheiding for joining us last segment. RogueCookers.com, his website. And at some point, that cart will be available on his website where you can buy online, I would imagine. This portion of the show being brought to you by JRE Tobacco, makers of Aladino cigars. Of course, huge fan of the Corojo Reserva line. Love the Aladino Classic. Really love the Sumatra as well. Bottom line, the Aroa family demonstrates their expertise time and time again in mastering hard-to-grow tobacco varieties and then blending them into a smoking experience that is second to none. Even as a growing and learning appreciator of the fine tobacco leaf as myself, you can get samples for me if you want. Send me an email, greg@thebbqcentralshow.com, and I can send you some JRE Aladino cigars out, and then you can tell me what you think of those. So we appreciate the good folks over at JRE Tobacco. Coming on next month, by the way, for no less than two segments, Justo Aroa is the guy that's running the shop out there, and he'll stop by and talk about it. Hey, coming out of the bullpen tonight is someone who has led the show open the past 2 weeks. He was the subject of the 2023 Barbecue Central Show's podumentary. He has gone out of his way the past 2 weeks to try and confuse me and make me look like a total douche. So let's stop that and get the straight information from the man himself. We welcome back our friend Joe Martinez. Joe, we have a YouTube poll question of the week that we're asking everybody in YouTube and all guests. Do you like curry? Yes or no?
Absolutely.
Yes. 59% of the voting public is saying yes, so we're growing to almost a 20% differential. Joe, 2 weeks ago, you posted a video on your YouTube channel announcing that Smokin' Joe's Pit Barbecue was closed.
How dare you?
Then, 2 days later, Smokin' Joe's Pit Barbecue, open for business.
We'll do it live.
Yeah.
And it was back open again this past weekend, and I'm trying to figure out the best question to ask. What the fuck?
Yeah, the timing of everything, how it went down, it's almost like I closed and then reopened. Or open before I closed. It seems like the story is a little confusing, and I'm even confused. I had to write things down just to catch myself. But I'll give you a quick timeline. So, the food truck. My last day of service was January the 20th. Yep. On January the 24th, I announced that I had closed the food truck. I posted on social media, closed until further notice. You know, yep. I had some things, personal things, come up with my family that I had to attend to. So, you know, the food truck was closed. As far as the video, that video I recorded on February the 5th. Okay. And I recorded the video and I wasn't going to release it. I just didn't feel, you know, comfortable releasing it. It almost felt like I was making excuses of why I closed. But then I was like, you know what? There's so many people that are vested into my YouTube channel that I felt that I owed it to them. So I released the video.
How would they even know you made it, though? If you never released it, nobody knows. You only know that.
Yeah. So on a local level, I was getting, on a local level, I was getting a ton of phone calls from people. Hey, are you guys open? Are you guys open? Are you closed? Are you open? So on February the 21st, I posted that we were going to reopen the food truck. Remember, I recorded this video on February the 5th. Now, on the 27th of February, I released the video. So that's where the confusion was, because I had posted that I'm reopening, but then on the 27th, I posted that video that closed my, the reasons why I closed my food truck.
Yeah.
And then we opened up on March the 1st. And that video, when I released it, got so much attention. It's like 350,000 views on YouTube, which is ridiculous. You know, here I am cooking barbecue for people, and the video that gets the absolute most attention is the one of me closing my food truck.
To put it in context for the folks that maybe don't follow your YouTube channel, I went back over the last 6 months and we're holding the announcement of the food truck closing to the side for a second. In the last 6 months, you haven't seen better than 50,000 YouTube views on any video that you've released in the past 6 months. Now, to put that in perspective, I would like gnaw my own arm off to get 50,000 views on a Barbecue Central Show video at some point. However, you look at the announcement of the video or the food truck closing, as you said, 350,000 views. I'll sit here and tell you right now, there's a part of me that thinks you're just trying to run up the YouTube numbers and you knew this thing was going to be a shit kicker and you just released it. You had no intention to closing the food truck in the first place.
Yeah, no, the food truck was closed for about a month and a half. You know, that's the part that people don't see. It was kind of it was a spontaneous thing. You know, I had to really pay attention to what we had going on. Again, on that video, I kind of talk about the things that led to me closing my food truck. It's not just the personal family issue that we had. You know, there was a lot that led to that. And I even thought about releasing a video of the timeline because it is confusing. And some people follow me on social media and they follow me on YouTube as well. And they are confused just like you were. You know, your email that you sent out about your show tonight said that I was, you know, I was closed for 38 minutes or whatever, you know, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah, but it was a month and a half that I actually closed my food truck.
Right, let's play a game real quick. Did one of these two things happen? Your brother quit the food truck or you fired your brother?
No.
Your chef quit the truck or you fired your chef?
No.
It's insane. All right. What's the family issue that's going on that pulls you away? Like, I mean, you left a very stable, I'm going to make up a word. I'm not even going to make up that word because it sounds so stupid. You were in your career very long to do this food truck. So for you to leave what is in essence, let's call it the quote unquote moneymaker, that does have to be a pretty heavy thing. So what's going on in Joe Martinez's life to have to pull away from the truck?
Yeah, it was, you know, I'm going to keep that kind of private, Greg. I mean, I know that I share a lot of things with you guys. I mean, this issue,
it's not a contest, but Doug just shared he had cancer.
I know that's here. Doug is sharing that information and I know it sounds like I'm trying to keep stuff from you, but I'm not. It's just, you know, some things I'd like to keep to myself. And, you know, it was something pretty serious enough for me to lead to making that decision to close my food truck. It was an emergency
health
that
stuff?
I just had to deal with. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Health related.
Not you.
But no, not okay. Me.
All right.
Yeah. Not me. I'm good. But, you know, that's what it was. And, you know, I had to pay attention to it. Family first. I mentioned that in the video, my YouTube video, that family always comes first. And, you know, if I wasn't as far as running the business, the barbecue business specifically, and I just had this one certain issue, I could have dealt with it. But with everything just piling up on me, it was a huge monkey on my back. Things were just piling up on me that just did it, you know. That just said, you know, that happened. And I said, okay, that's it. I'm closing it down. Let me deal with this. I'm not worried about the food truck right now. I'm not worried about anything else but my family. And, you know, once things settled down, I decided to go ahead and talk about reopening the business. But obviously I made some changes.
And your brother and the chef are still there.
So my chef had quit. Probably 2-3 weeks before I shut down.
Greener, that was, greener grass on the other side of the road, or
I don't know. It was one of those things that no notice, you know, hey, today's my last day. I'm like, oh shit. Okay. You know, but again, my brother and I ran that thing by ourselves and we were perfectly fine. Hell, my brother could run it by himself now.
Yeah.
But I was okay with it. So it has nothing to do with that, you know. In fact, the way that we have things running now, you know, it's I don't really have to be there. You know, I'm just there for quality control pretty much. But my brother's doing everything, and I've got a cashier that's also helping with the prep stuff. So, you know, things are working really good, and I kick myself in the butt for not doing this at the very beginning. You know, I think I just started with such a big menu, and that's probably, you know, not the main reason why I closed, but that would have helped if I would have done that at the beginning.
So I want to talk about that here, but let me back out on this chef thing for a second. So I've had a number of conversation with folks who listen to, I'm not starting these are people coming at me. Because people always love to ask me about guests. I don't know what the fuck that's all about. But I've had a number of these conversations. And your segments last year especially, who are endlessly fascinated with the fact that you had both a pit master and your brother. And does your brother have a name, by the way? I keep calling him your brother.
Yeah, Marty's his name.
Marty? All right.
Yeah, Marty.
So you have Marty as the pit master, and then you have this executive chef on payroll. And how you were able to afford both without going broke. For instance, Rusty Monson has told me that if he hired an executive chef, it would put him directly out of business. And he's done really well, more revenue number-wise, like top line. I don't know what it all nets out to him and where yours nets out, but top line revenue does more than you. So how were you able to do this when Rusty can't even entertain it?
Yeah, so I was pretty fortunate, you know, the chef that I had didn't come in asking for a ton of money. She was never really, she had worked at a restaurant in Austin, and she actually, she went to school with Evan from Leroy and Lewis. They were classmates in culinary school. So she worked at a restaurant, but then aside from that, she wasn't in the restaurant business. So she didn't come in asking for a ton of money, and I think that was the reason why I was able to afford, you know, having her on board. And, you know, she was great while she was there, you know. But, you know, again, whatever she had going on, whatever personal issues she had going on, from one day to the next, she just decided that wasn't, you know, the job for her. And, you know, when that happened, obviously, well, now I had a little bit more better payroll because I didn't have that salary, you know, even if it's, you know, $27,000 a year, whatever it was, you know, I didn't have that I had to pay out anymore.
Let's talk about the menu. When I'm talking to people getting into food truck or restaurant business, we always talk about the menu. We always talk about the lure of wanting to be all things to all people. And especially in the barbecue scene, it seems like you should have 9 things on a menu, but you can go to a lot of barbecue restaurants and it's like going to Cheesecake Factory. They give you a friggin' Bible and it's like page after page after page, or board after board after board of stuff that I don't even know how many times a week you would make it. How do you fall into trying to be all things to all people? Is it because of YouTube success and wanting to showcase your cooking ability? Is there ego involved? What are the biggest things?
I think it's D, all of the above, to be honest with you, Greg. You know, I tried to, you know, because I was a YouTuber, you know, I think that was a pretty big thing. You know, one of my goals was to be on Texas Monthly, which I made, you know, the top 25 new barbecue joints in Texas. And I'm very proud of that. And that's something that I was chasing, but not really, you know, that wasn't my only goal. You know, it would have been nice to be in the top 50 list. Right. And I think I was definitely heading in the right direction. And I'm not giving up on that dream either, but you know, I wanted to be a barbecue business in a food truck. And that just does not make sense. If you think about it, you know, all the proteins that you've got to cook, all the sides, the desserts. I mean, my menu was probably larger than a lot of barbecue joints in Texas. Mm-hmm. And because I wanted that, you know, if somebody wanted a beef rib when they came to my food truck, I wanted to supply it. If they wanted smoked turkey, if they wanted pork belly burnt ends, you wanted one of my six sides or five sides. I forget how many I had. It was just too much. So I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be the barbecue joint, just like going to some of these big barbecue joints in Texas. And that's the wrong thing. Personally, I think that's the wrong thing. I shouldn't have never done that. But then the menu kept growing. You know, I said, hey, well, we've got some leftover brisket. Let's make some tacos. But making tacos, well, now I'm making flour tortillas. Now I've got to spend more money to get these other ingredients, and I'm creating more work for myself. So it's just the snowball effect. But I think that we fixed that for now.
How are you able to get your hands around it and corral it into a much more pared down and manageable menu? Do you just look over what's most popular and keep that more or less?
Yes. So I was able to go into the point of sale system that I've got, and it breaks all of the menu items down, and it'll tell me exactly how many of this item I sold. And, you know, I was taking a look at my most popular items. It wasn't my platter. Yeah, my platters were up there, but the most popular thing is a brisket sandwich. And then we had other things like a Texas grilled cheese. You know, it's a brioche Texas toast with you know, toasted on both sides with brisket and cheddar cheese. It was amazing. So, you know, those items that were top sellers are still on my menu today. The Texas tater, which is a loaded baked potato, that's a hot item, and that made it on our menu, and I'm keeping that. So, you know, I condense my menu down to two proteins, pretty much brisket and pulled pork. And with those two proteins, I'm able to make the barbecue sandwiches. Because we're trimming briskets, well, I've got some meat left over. Well, I can still make my smash burgers. And then obviously we're offering two different smash burgers on my menu. So, you know, a lot of customers still come and ask for ribs and banana pudding and mac and cheese. But, you know, it's my menu is what it is. And it's going to stay like that for a while.
At the end of 2023, the podumentary that you graciously participated in, you told me that under no uncertain terms, you would be in a brick and mortar location in 2024. How's that declaration aging as we sit here mid-March of 2024?
Well, the first quarter is not over yet, Greg. I think I said the first quarter of 2024.
I'm giving you a little leash. I was thinking during the course of the year.
No. I said the first quarter. You know, my plan is to still find a brick and mortar location, but it's not something that I'm pressed to find right now. But I am going to find a brick and mortar. When that happens, I will bring back my old menu, which is, you know, a solid menu, I think. But in the food truck, it's just not something that's going to happen right now.
If it's going to work in the food truck, why are you going to bring everything back? Fuck that. You're just going to be in now you're inside. You know, Daniel Vaughn's going to be happy that he's not too hot or not too cold, but you still have a menu that's generating the it's giving you the margin that you want. You know, maybe add ribs and add the banana pudding, but don't go back to all that other stuff. Why would you do that?
Well, again, I want to be traditional style Texas barbecue joint where you can get all the menu items that I had before. And part of the problem in the food truck was I'm limited on space. You know, I've got one food warmer in a barbecue joint. You know, I'll probably have three or four food warmers, you know, and God willing, the customers to feed all that food to. But it comes down to space and, you know, prepping everything in the food truck. And it's a difficult thing to do everything inside of the food truck.
Let's have a revised outlook for Smoke and Joe's Pit Barbecue 2024 for the next couple quarters, at least.
For the next couple of quarters, you know, I'm going to stick to my menu, run what I've got, but at the same time, I'm going to be looking for a brick and mortar location, a standalone building, even if it's an old warehouse, you know, run down building. That's what I'm going to look for. I'm going to continue to obviously post videos on my YouTube channel. That's going to, because of the menu size, that's given me more freedom to be a little bit more consistent with my YouTube videos as well. But the plan is the ultimate goal is still to open up a brick and mortar.
And we're well past any health family stuff. We're full bore.
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Thank goodness.
Have you had a colonoscopy, Joe?
No, but I went for my blood work. I went for my blood work this morning, and when I go back for the results, I'm going to ask for that.
You demand it. Don't ask. You say, yeah. Hey, some schmuck in Ohio is telling me, I'm not asking for one. I'm telling you, give me the referral or schedule me or whatever. I went into my primary care lady, and you know, I've never had a primary care physician until last December. And she's like, well, what else do you want to do? I said, I want to get a colonoscopy. And she said, really? I said, I can't wait. And she said, okay, well, let's get you set up. And then 2 months later, you know, got it done, got the clean bill of health there, which is good. But obviously, as Doug said, you know, prevention, and it seems to be getting diagnosed to dudes that are younger, well, women too, but it's not like 50 plus anymore. I mean, as Doug said, he's seeing more and more 40 and below. So I think you and I are both above 40, unfortunately. So
yes.
Next time you're on, you better have that colonoscopy. Otherwise, I'm really going to give it to you.
I'll tell you what, I'll see if they'll let my camera in and I'll record it, Greg.
I mean, we don't have to go that far. Your word is good with me. We're talking with Joe Martinez from Smoke and Joe's Pit Barbecue in El Paso, Texas. He is open. The menu is limited, but it is a rocking menu. So make sure that you head out that way and try some of his food out. Joe, appreciate the insight here tonight and setting the record straight. And we'll look for you again soon.
Thanks, Greg.
You got it. Joe Martinez right there. So if you were confused just like me, I'm at least unconfused. I'm still a little confused that he might want to bring back the full menu after we're in the I'll talk about it. Now. Don't worry about it. We got plenty of time. Appreciate his insight and his candor there. Listen up, gang. Our friends at Big Papa Smokers have something special just for you, listeners of the show. Whether you're seasoned pitmaster or grilling newbie, Big Papa Smokers, your one-stop online shop for all things barbecue. From their championship rubs and mouth-watering sauces, essential accessories, they've got what you need to get your food to the next level. Here's the cherry on top. Big Papa Smokers offering the listeners of the Barbecue Central Show an exclusive deal. Use promo code REMPE at checkout. That's REMPE. Then you get $10 off your next $50 purchase of rubs, sauces, and accessories. Imagine the possibility. Evaluate your ribs with Big Papa Smokers Sweet Money. Add Big Papa's Desert Gold to your chicken, or better yet, pick up Double Secret and put it on your steak. Head on over to BigPapaSmokers.com and start shopping today. Don't forget, you can use promo code REMPE at checkout, REMPE, and claim your $10 off your next order of $50 or more. Free money. Start saving today. Don't forget to check out Big Papa's full line of recipes at CookingWithBigPapa.com, and of course, follow them on all social media platforms for amazing recipes. We're back to close the show right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Let's get back to a guy who has more experience giving you his opinion than he actually has cooking. Once again, here's your host, Greg Rempe.
We thank Joe Martinez for joining us last segment and closing out the show here this evening. Again, he's open. El Paso, Texas, food truck, looking to be in a brick and mortar still at some point in 2024. We'll see how that pans out. Last look at the poll here as we get ready to call it an evening. Do you like curry? 55% of you are saying yes, you do like curry. I am not in favor of the curry, but the majority, I'm usually not in line with the majority. Every once in a while on these, I am with the majority, but not usually, and tonight I am not. All the way back in the first hour, we had Meathead talking about meat being closer to the bone and being more flavorful. Not true. Then we had Robert Moss talking about what the, if there was a first distinct Southern style barbecue cooking method. We talked about how it proliferated, how it changed, and introduction of barbecue pits. Great piece of barbecue history in Southern barbecue if you're interested in getting that in the replay or the re-listen. Second hour, Doug Scheiding talking about getting in the rub biz. Also promoting Get Your Colonoscopy. Him and I both doing that. Doug also unveiling for the first time that he battled and successfully did so with colon cancer. So good job, Doug. Way to do it. And closing out the show, Joe Martinez, Smokin' Joe's Pit Barbecue. Big show planned for you next week. So third Tuesday brings Wes Wright. We have a Daniel Vaughn in. It's full show. I just can't remember all the time, okay? But it's big. Really big. How do I always leave you? September 11th, 2001. I will never forget until next Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. This is your program host and proud U.S. American, Greg Rempe. Good night now.
This is Dion Blumenreiter with Big Hoss One Sauce, and you're listening to the best show on all things barbecue with my man, Greg Rempe.